Well, good evening. Before I begin my presentation, I want to give you thanks again for the financial help that you provide for me each month. Without that, I would not be able to do what I do. And there are a number of people, some individuals and some congregations, who have been so very faithful to provide the funds which are necessary. And travel is an expensive business sometimes. And so I'm especially appreciative of your financial help, your fellowship with me, I suppose for a number of years. It's not just something recent, but it's been a number of years. And I thank you for that. When Paul and Barnabas completed their first trip, when they came back to Antioch, Acts 15 says that the church came together and they gave a report of the work which they had done. This is not an entertainment session. This is a report that I want to make to you about the recent trip that Ken Chapman and I made together. I think our first work together, Ken Chapman and I, began somewhere around 2014. Ken was still preaching at Helton Drive. And it was his first trip out of the United States. He had to get a passport, get all the stuff necessary, take the necessary medications and injections. And so we made our first trip together. I think this is about our fifth trip together. We had intended to go in December of 2025. But at the end of November the 28th and 29th, a cyclone by the name of Bitma occurred in the Bay of Bengal, which is between Sri Lanka and India, and it hit Sri Lanka at near the end of the month. It was not an especially powerful cyclone, but it had lots of water, and the rain was intense, and 1 million people were displaced. Some probably, the bodies will never be found because of the landslides which buried houses. A lot of damage was done, and Ken and I decided, as a result of consulting with the brothers in Sri Lanka, we do not need to go in December. So we decided that we would go at the end of January, and I'm hoping you can see what I'm seeing. Okay. And where in the world is Sri Lanka? Well, if you look on this map, you'll see a lot of names. There are a lot of Kazakhstans and Tajikistans and a lot of stands and China. But Sri Lanka is in that little red circle. It is a rather small island off the southeast coast of India. And it, even though it's quite small, it is a very beautiful island. And a number of Europeans will take vacations in Sri Lanka, so it depends upon tourism for a lot of its income. The cyclone disrupted a lot of that. So Ken and I decided that we would leave, I think, on January the 26th, if I'm correct. Well, I woke up that Sunday morning, and that was what was on our deck. And if you'll recall, we had very severe weather. We had lots of sleet, and we had a little bit of snow in Russellville. And it looked very, very dicey if we would even be able to go. So the Helton Drive Church met on that morning, and Jeff Henderson agreed to take me to Huntsville, and I got a hotel room because I was afraid the roads would be impassable on the morning that we were going to leave. So I spent the night Sunday night in Huntsville, and the next morning I met Ken. We met, I think, in Chicago. Ken flew from Joplin to Chicago, and I flew from Huntsville to Chicago. Ken had made a deal with me that I felt like I could not refuse. He said, if we will travel together, he said, I will buy your airline ticket. I said, well, how can I refuse? So I said, okay. And he said, now we're going to be traveling Turkish Airways. I had flown Turkish Airways one time before, and had a long layover in Istanbul. And Ken said, well, it just so happens that we're going to have a long layover on our way to Sri Lanka. And they offer a guided tour of some interesting sites in Istanbul. So he said, let's go. And so we were able to take off, and we spent the night in Chicago and left on a Tuesday morning. Now, these are some friends of mine from way, way back. Obviously, there's Ken. And then there is Philip Chumbly. Philip is the oldest brother of Kenny Chumbly. And then there's me, and then there's David Disselkamp. I've known the Disselkamps for a long time, and I've known the Chumblys almost as long as I've been alive, it feels like, because the second located work that Pat and I did was in Rantoul, Illinois, and that's where the Chumblys are from. Kenny was still in high school when I moved there, and so I've known the Chumbly family for a long time. And we met at a very famous Chicago pizzeria and had a very good visit with each other. And the best thing was that Philip paid for it all. And I said, that's really good. So we boarded our flight in Chicago, and we stopped in Istanbul. Now, Istanbul is an important place for a number of reasons, but one of the things is it's situated on the Bosphorus Strait, and the Bosphorus separates Asia from Europe. I think we are on the European side, and across this strait would be the Asian side. This was part of the tour that we made. We went to a number of mosques and things of that type. Turkey is a very large Islamic country. And so we saw some interesting things, and we came back, and we got on our flight to go to Sri Lanka. I was not feeling very well. I'd taken a cold, and I was sniffing and snorting. And we, about 9 hours later, we landed about 6:30 in the morning in Colombo, Sri Lanka. And everybody knows about luggage. I didn't have any. My luggage stayed in Istanbul. I use a tracking device on my phone, and I was able to tell exactly where it was in the airport. And I had to go and make a report to the lost baggage. And if you've ever been to countries like Sri Lanka, and I'm not trying to cast any reflection upon them, but they're not very well organized as far as doing business and tracking lost luggage and things of that type. So I got in what looked to be a queue. Well, it wasn't a queue, really. It was just kind of a conglomerate standing in front of the travel desk. And so I was able to make my report, and they said, well, we will see what we can do. We will take your luggage to the hotel. Well, actually, being at 6:30 in the morning, Ken and I had planned to leave and go to our first appointment. And I said, Ken, I can't travel without my luggage. All my stuff is in it. And I wasn't feeling very well. So I said, Ken, why don't you go to the first appointment, and I will go to the hotel. We generally stay at the same hotel in Colombo. And so I made reservations, and I waited for my luggage. And I took my medication. And the next morning, my luggage showed up. So I was able to hire a van, and I met Ken at a place called Badulla. That doesn't mean anything to you, but Badulla is up in the hill country. Sri Lanka at one time was called Ceylon, and if you like tea, probably the tea that you drink comes from Ceylon. It's well known for its very fine quality teas, and the tea estates are a very beautiful part of the country, but they're up in the mountains. And unfortunately, the roads are very narrow. So what would ordinarily take, I think maybe Badulla may have been maybe 200 kilometers away, which is about 120 miles. What would take maybe 2 hours to drive 120 miles would take 5 hours in Sri Lanka. And the roads are winding and narrow. And not only were they winding and narrow, but there had been some damage done to the roads because of the cyclone. So I was able to meet Ken in Badulla, and we had a number of venues that we were going to be taking part in. Some were going to be some private studies, some were going to be studies in places where churches meet. And so our first study is going to be in a little place called Pasara. I'd never been there before. We are working with a brother named Nagendran, and I've known Nagendran since he was in high school, which is a long, long time ago. I performed the marriage ceremony for Nagendran and his wife, Bobby, many years ago. So I've known the Gendron for a long time. He has three sons and one daughter and lives just outside Badulla. And he arranged our schedule for us. And that's one of the good things about having a close companion there is that he was able to make our schedule, and it worked very well for Ken and for me. So we met, this was going to be, I think, in the morning, and Pesara is in the middle of a tea estate. I'll show you a picture of his tea estate in just a moment. But tea estates are a very beautiful part of the landscape in Sri Lanka. This is in sort of a community center, which is rather unusual. The church meets in this community center. It may be of interest to you that none of the brothers that we work with there, when I say we, I mean Ken and me, meet in a church building. They either meet in someone's home or they have a place like this. I will show you a church building, but it wasn't theirs. And I'll explain a little bit about that in just a moment. But Ken and I each taught at this place. We lasted maybe, I taught for about an hour and Ken taught for about an hour. And that hour is going to be a translated hour because we have to have interpreters there. The local people who live along the coast basically are Buddhist, and they speak the Sinhalese language. But up in the hill country, these are not Buddhist, they're Hindu people. And they speak Tamil because many of them migrated from Tamil Nadu in India. So our lessons are going to need to be interpreted, and Nagendran will interpret what we say into the native language. And that takes a little bit of time, but basically once you get sort of a cadence established, it is not as difficult as you might think it is. But the students were very attentive. We had very good attendance, and that was in the morning. I think we had lunch somewhere. I don't remember where. But and by the way, this is our greeting. One of the embarrassing things to me, particularly in India, is that when you come into a new place, they put garlands all over, garlands of flowers. It's embarrassing to be draped with flowers, but that's their custom and that's their practice. And I appreciated this because this is just a cutout flower, and they presented Ken one and they presented me one. And I thought that was a very nice gesture on their part. This is what a tea estate, this is a very small section of a tea estate. And what happens generally on a tea estate is that the people who pluck the tea, and they're called tea pluckers, they generally live in housing which is provided by the tea estate company. Some of these are in mountainous areas. This is a hilly area. It's not really mountainous here, but they have to be almost half billy goat to be able to get in between these tea bushes and be able to pluck the top of the tea and put it in a sack behind them that they carry on their back. And then that's carried to a central place where they dump it all out and they put it into a little truck, and that truck goes to the tea factory where the tea is going to be, dried, and then it will be cut, and then it will be fired, and then it will be packaged. So the tea estate in the central part of the country is a very important part of the economy of the country. And many of our brethren work in those tea estates. One of the things that happened when the cyclone hit Sri Lanka, some of the roads were impassable and the tea workers could not get to the fields. If they don't work, they don't get paid. So one of the things that Ken did was to establish a GoMe fund. Is that correct?
GoFundMe.
You can fund me too. It's a GoFundMe, and Ken raised enough money where he was able to provide the lost wages for the brothers who could not go to work and pluck the tea. And not only that, but there were damages done to some of the housing. People lost furniture, they lost clothing, and so Ken was able to provide from that fund the help that was needed in order to make up for the things which were damaged in the cyclone. This is the church building. Now, I looked at that. This is sort of a corrugated metal building on bamboo frames. And it looks like if a big wind came along, it would blow it over. But we met with a group of people, a group of Christians. Some of them are Christians, some of them are not Christians. And we met in that little building. But the odd thing about it is it was an abandoned building. I think something like an Assembly of God had been meeting in that building. And I don't know if you can notice or not, but there is a banner back here. And if you'll notice, it says Gospel Ministry or Ministries. Well, I thought, are we meeting in this building? And they said, yes, we are, because it's been abandoned. And so the brothers meet there, but the interesting thing is they did not take down the banner. So here are our brothers meeting in this abandoned building. And you'll notice there are not any pews there. Some of the women are sitting on chairs. Most of the women are sitting on the floor, or some are standing in the back. Now, that is not unusual. In fact, I've seen oftentimes in meeting with churches in India and in Sri Lanka and in other parts, say in Africa as well, that the men will sit in the chairs and the women sit on the floor. And generally the men sit on one side of the building and the women sit on the other side of the building. You'll notice there are not many men here. Most all of these assembled that day are ladies. And so this is the schedule that we would keep. We would meet with a group in the morning, and we would meet with a group in the evening or the afternoon. And each of these places, we would travel from our hotel to where these places are located. Then on Sunday, we met with the church that meets in Nagendran's house. Now, Nagendran lives up a mountain, and at one point during the cyclone, his road was impassable, so he could not get in and out. But they cleared the road, and we were able to meet with them on Sunday morning. I have a picture of Nagendran's family, but I did not take a picture of the church that meets, but it meets in his living room, and it's usually about 50 or 60 people, and they're smashed in like sardines. A lot of the young people meet there. And so Nagendran has erected a small room downstairs where he can take the young people and have classes with the young people. And many of these young people are not Christians. They come from homes that are basically Hindus. So this is a very good way in which to get into a community, to be able to teach the younger people the essence of what it means to be a Christian, about who is God and what the Bible is. This is Nagendran. Well, let me show you who Nagendran is. This is Nagendran here. This is his oldest son, Nimro, and these are two other sons. This is his wife, Bobby, and this is his daughter. And I do not know who that lady is. She's an interloper. I couldn't find out who she was. But this is the house that Nagendran lives in. And it was due to the goodness of some brothers in the United States who provided the funds for Nagendran to build this house. And he's lived in this house for a number of years. That's where the church meets. That's where he holds his classes, along with classes in tea estates. And that's where he lives. This is some of the effects of the cyclone. Now this is, I had a video, and I'm not sure, I've got two videos on here that I'm not sure it's going to work. But I had a video that was sent to me by a brother named Mohan. I've known Mohan for many, many years. He lives in a place called Nuwara Eliya, which is about 6,000 feet in elevation. Nuwara Eliya, when the British were occupying Sri Lanka, called Ceylon, this would be the vacation spot where the Britishers would go during the summertime because it's very cool there. We planned to hold a five-day seminar or a class arrangement for any of the preachers who wished to come, and we were going to meet in a place called Smyrna Fellowship. We've met there a number of times. We've rented facilities for them, and we bring the men into Nuwara Eliya. We pay for their lodging, we pay for their bus fare, and we pay for their food. They are able to stay on site. They don't have to go, they don't have to walk around town finding a place to stay. It's sort of a dormitory-like arrangement. And so we're going to go to Nuwara Eliya from Badulla, which is about another three-hour van ride. Now, there was a couple from Orlando, Florida, Walcott Steele and his wife Bonnie had planned to join us and meet together in Colombo on the same day that we flew in. Brother Steele's oldest son works for American Airlines, and so they have courtesy flights. And Bonnie and Walcott were on a flight to Doha, but they could not find a flight coming to Sri Lanka for a couple of days. So they were going to join us a little bit later. And I'll show you a picture of him and her. He is an elder at the South Bumby Church in Orlando. But this is some of the damage which is done by the cyclone. This is some more damage. Now you can imagine if you have to use transportation to get to and from either your work or to buy groceries or to do any kind of shopping, that impassable roads are going to be a terrible disaster. And many of the roads were blocked. By the time we got there, these roads had been cleared. The trees had been cut. But the roadbeds in some places were very, very treacherous. Now, this is one of the videos that I want to show, and I'm hoping this will work. I'm going to try something. No, it did not. So let me see if I can do something else. That's not good. Well, as you can see, this is sort of a parade. And I was in a hotel room, and Ken was in the next room to me, and we hear this sound, this beating of the drums, and we looked out the window, and this parade is going down the street. And we went, what in the world is going on? Well, it just so happened that was on February the 4th. And February the 4th is Independence Day in Sri Lanka. On February the 4th in 1948, Ceylon became independent from the United Kingdom. And it was really kind of interesting to I'm going to see if I can, no, it will not do. But they were marching, and their marching step, they looked like a bunch of marionettes, the way that their arms and their legs moved. But they had a nice parade down the street right in front of our hotel and had sort of a ceremony down front. We did not go to the ceremony, but this was a pretty important day for them. It's like our July the 4th. I think in 1971, the name was changed from Ceylon to Sri Lanka. I've always called this Sri Lanka, but it's really not Sri Lanka. It's Sri Lanka. It's not an SH sound. It's Sri. And this obviously will have to do with the Buddhist population. It's a Sinhalese idea. But this country is, like I say, composed of two main elements, of Buddhist and Hindus. And oftentimes, they don't get along very well. The Buddhists basically are in the government, and the Hindus are the ones who have to obey the government. They don't have much say-so. But this day was very important for the Sri Lankans, and we celebrated with them. This is some more of the damage that was done by the cyclone. It's hard to imagine how that much rain falling in the hill country could do so much damage. But almost every road that we traveled, there was damage done to the hillside, and the soil became so saturated that oftentimes the hillside would just give way, and we saw one place where almost an entire village had been covered up with a landslide. The houses were obliterated, and we were told more than likely those bodies will never be retrieved. They were sort of buried by the landslide, and that's where they will stay. It's hard for us to imagine the severity of this type of disaster in a place where there just is not a lot of equipment that is available to do the clearing. Much of the clearing was done with something like a backhoe, which can you imagine having to pile up all of this stuff, all of this debris? This is where we're meeting in Nuwara Eliya, and this is the first day of our session. And this is our brother Ken. This is a man named Joe Manaparuma. I've known Joe since 1993. I went to Sri Lanka for the first time in 1993, and Joe and I worked together And we have worked together for a number of years. And Joe is going to do the interpreting or the translating for us, because some of these men do not understand English. Now, I said that I would show you Brother Steele. This is Brother Steele, Walcott Steele from Orlando. And these other men are local men. This brother lives in a place called Gaul, which is on the east, on the west coast of Sri Lanka. And I've known him for a long time. He had a kidney transplant a number of years ago. His wife died about 5 years ago. And he works with a small church in a Portuguese town called Gaul. These two are Ngendran's sons. And I think we had 12 men who came, and we studied the books of 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. It was my idea. I told Ken, I think these men need to learn to be taught, that is, go through these books, because basically they are instructions for evangelists and what an evangelist does. So we were able in 4.5 days to go through each of these books. We had sessions in the morning and sessions in the afternoon. But one thing was always constant. At 11 o'clock, the lady brought in tea. You almost have to have a tea break if you're going to do any teaching in Sri Lanka. It is a British idea to start with, I suppose. But we had a tea break in the morning and a tea break in the afternoon. And we were able to study together, which I think we had a whiteboard behind us, which was a good implement. I mentioned a brother by the name of Mohan. Mohan was a tailor. He did sewing. He had his left hand was in some way partially paralyzed. He would support his family by doing alterations. He did some alterations for me. He also preached at a small church about 2 hours away. He would go there on Saturday. He would preach on Sunday, then he would come home to Nuwara Eliya, which he could accomplish that in 2 days. Shockingly, I learned at the first part of January, I got a notice from one of the men that Mohan had died. The last time Ken and I were in Sri Lanka, Mohan needed a CPAP machine, which we were able to purchase a CPAP for him because he had trouble breathing. Well, Mohan, unknown to us, contracted pneumonia. He evidently did not go to the hospital immediately. When he collapsed, he was taken to the hospital and he expired. He died there. Well, that was a terrible blow to me because Mohan and I have been friends for a long, long time. This lady, Mary, is his widow. Ken and I were able to visit Brother Steele and his wife were able to visit with her to find out what her needs were, because she basically is without any kind of support. So we were able to determine what her needs were. We left some money with her, and I think that there would be some arrangements made to make it more stable, more periodic for her to get money. But Mohan had two children. The older son, which is standing there, has some emotional problems, and he oftentimes has to be hospitalized. He lives at home unless he has an episode and then has to go to the hospital. But Mohan also had an adopted child. This is Christina. I've known Christina since she was a little girl. She is deaf. And as a result of her deafness, Mohan sent her to a school in India where she learned to sign. And she also learned to trade. I think I've got a sort of a framed picture, not a picture, but what would you call it? Stitching. She had stitching done, and it's very nice. And she is now married, and she came to see her mother and stayed with her for just a little while. This is some more damage which has been done by the cyclone. And It is hard to describe. Even coming almost 2 months after the cyclone had hit, it was still very surprising to see how much damage was still not taken care of. This is on the way to Ragla. Ragla is a community about 30 kilometers away from Nuwara Eliya. And we were going up to Ragla, or down to Ragla, to teach on the Sunday morning assembly. Now, I've known the brother Sagar, who preaches there, for a long time, and the church meets in his house. It is hard to imagine 30 people being crammed into his small house. But when we walked in there, I was surprised we could even find a place to sit down. The singing was great. I recorded the singing, but I don't think I'll be able to play it. But here is the church. Here's a small number of the people in Ragla. Like I say, they meet on Sunday morning in the house where Brother Sagar and his wife and his son live. And after the services were over, three of the men met with Ken and me, and they said, we really need to have a church building. And it is not unusual for brethren to make a request to Americans, because most all foreigners believe that Americans are very rich and that money is not a problem. And so we sat down and we talked, and we asked about where will it be situated. And they said, well, the Tea Estate is going to donate the land, so we don't have to buy land. So how much do you need? Well, we need at least $15,000. And then Ken and I said, well, we don't have that much money. And so they were very insistent, and their need is obviously a real need. I'm not trying to downplay their need. But we said that we would try to find, if we can, some donors who would help take care of a building. If you can give us, number one, a figure as to how much you need, the plan for the building, and where the building would be located. So far, we've not heard from them. So we're waiting to find out their needs. But you can imagine being crammed together in a house. And by the way, it's quite warm there. And so the needs of these people are not only needs to take care from the damages of the cyclone, but also some of the needs for physical needs, such as a church building. And if they do get a church building, it will be the only church building I know of among our brethren where the saints are meeting in Sri Lanka. Well, this is downtown Colombo. Ken and I left Nuwara Eliya, and it was about a 7-hour van ride from Nuwara Eliya to Colombo. And we were going to stay in Colombo 2 days because we were going to meet in Joe's house and have a study in Joe's house on Tuesday evening, and we were leaving on Wednesday. So we went downtown, and it's kind of interesting. This building here is, you can see the British influence, I think, from this building. This is a kind of a merchandising mart. So I don't know what these buildings probably came from the 1800s, but you can also see very modern towers. So when you go to Colombo, you see parts of the old Colombo, which dates from the British Empire, and the new Colombo, which is basically the financial center of the island. And I'm sorry, this also was a video. Ken and I are, they call this three-wheeler, a tuk-tuk. And that's the way we get around. Ken takes up most of the back seat. So I took a video of this tuk-tuk because just to show the traffic. You don't dare stick your hand out either side because there will be traffic on either side of this tuk-tuk. And there really is not what we would call traffic rules. Sometimes you have red lights and sometimes you don't. So it's kind of a free-for-all. I just kind of close my eyes and let the driver take us where we're going. But this is how we came from the hotel down to the downtown. It's about a 45-minute drive, and it's an adventure. But this is a very common way. You either walk or you take a bus. Most people do not have an automobile. In fact, none of the preachers I know of has an automobile. Some of them have a motorcycle, but most of them don't have any kind of mechanical vehicle. They either walk or they take a tuk-tuk where they go. So this is kind of a glimpse of our brothers in Sri Lanka. The churches are basically very small. The church in Gendron's house, I think, would number somewhere between 50 and 60. And it is the largest group that I know of in the island. Some of the smaller groups, like the group that meets in Sagar's house, maybe have 30, and other groups are even smaller than that. So there is not any, there are a number of people who are Christians there, but they meet in small churches, and they are very spread apart. And traveling between these churches is often very difficult because of the roads. So this is a glimpse of some of the people. And again, I thank you for your very generous support. And I don't know that I'll ever get back to go to Sri Lanka. If I do, that'll be great. But if I don't, I'm hopeful that Ken and maybe some others who whom Ken can influence, they can continue to go there because the influence of institutional brothers is very strong in both Sri Lanka and in India and in Africa. And so I like to encourage men, if they have an if they have a will and if they have the means to do so, take some time to go to some of these places and work among these people. One of the good things, at least I found, is that outside of this country, there are people who are willing to sit down and talk with you about the Bible. Door knocking in America, from my perspective, is not very profitable. That's not to say it should not be done. But in places like Sri Lanka and in Africa in particular, if you knock on a door and you say, "Would you like to talk a little bit about the Bible?" very seldom will you be turned down. There will be people who will pull up a stool or a chair or sit on the ground, and you can discuss the Bible with them. So that's one of the reasons why I do what I do, because there is a willingness to study, and there is a need for that kind of study. So again, I thank you very much for your support. And I suppose it would be, I think, in order to say that if there is a person here this evening who has a need that could be met by the brothers here, if you'd like to become a Christian, you can become a Christian tonight. Or if you need to have, if you need a prayer, or if you need some other type of spiritual need, then we're going to sing a song and we'll stand together and you can come as we sing.